Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, it's a Monday. Moving into December, here we go. Football really counts now. Live in Los Angeles, this is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, Fox Sports Radio, iHeartRadio, and right here on FS1, 1 hour from now, where Colin was right, where Colin was wrong. Plenty of both. Great Monday Night Football game tonight. Seahawks, a real Super Bowl contender, I believe, if they can get their pass rush right. Joy Taylor is joining me. Joy, how are you?
I am great. That was a... interesting set of games yesterday.
It was. And it was an interesting, going back to last Thursday, it's a very interesting place we are in the NFL. So it's funny. When I was a kid, I used to get like a pocket schedule of my favorite college or pro football teams. And I would do like WL, WL. And I always try to be realistic. I never wanted to be a fan like, we got 14-0. The Seahawks will never lose a game when I was a kid. And I always tried to be realistic. So when I predicted the Tampa Bay Buccaneers would go 10-6 and is a wild card team. I don't remember every game I picked, but right now, here's the W's and L's from week one. L, W, 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 L, W, 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 L, W, L, L. Four left should all be W, 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 W's. Three of the teams they play, Atlanta twice, Detroit, are bad. So your pocket schedule, this is exactly what you did and I did. Right? We picked them to be 10-6. Most of you picked them to be 9-7 or 10-6. There were a few doubters and a few they're going to win the Super Bowl. That's what we all did. And then this morning, everybody's like, whoa, what is going on? I don't know. They lost close to Patrick Mahomes. This is all very predictable. They're a work in progress. They're very talented. And because there was no preseason, they're thrown together. This is where they are. They're 7-5. It looks like they're going to win three of their next four or four games to go 11-5 or 10-6. That is exactly the high end that 90% of us had. My question with this, Joy is my witness, was never about Tom Brady's age, and it was never about his arm. I never questioned that. I lived in Tampa, and I lived next to Boston. I said, you're talking about Tom Brady, rigid, efficient, willful, aspirational, driven, moving to loosey-goosey Tampa cocktails at four with Bruce Arians, no biscuit if you don't risk it. That stylistically was my concern. And this morning it still is. It's not about Tampa's talent. It's not about Brady. Did you notice Tony Romo yesterday? And I love Tony. How he was defending Tom Brady for 3.5 hours. Anybody notice that? Why would that be? Because star quarterbacks protect star quarterbacks. And Bruce Arians came out with a flamethrower and ripped Brady last week. And so Tom Brady called up his buddy Tony Romo and said, you know, here's the story. And so if you listen for 3.5 hours, it was Tony Romo defending Tom Brady. That's all it was. And that's the game they're playing now. The concern with me, and it's always been a concern, is that when people are successful, they're even harder to change. It's hard to get anybody to change once they get to be 40, 50 years old. But if you're the most successful player in the history of America's most popular sport, Tom Brady, the idea that you're going to go loosey-goosey and throw the ball over the top all the time and be comfortable, you're not. That's why I think there's a strong possibility Bruce Arians is not around next year and he retires with a big check. I don't think Arians and Brady, they're so different football-wise. They're so different personality-wise. They're so different lifestyle-wise. They're both winners. But I don't think that's the fit. I never did. Now, I said they're going to be good enough to win a bunch of games because they got a bunch of talent. I like the GM. I like Arians. I love Brady. But there's nothing really surprising about any of this. As I said a couple weeks ago, I led the show. I said, when you're a parent, the days are long and the years fly by. In the NFL, Sundays are crazy, but the year is so predictable. Tampa's going to end up exactly where you predicted. Y'all predicted 9-7 and 10-6. You didn't have them winning the division. Yet the Saints have been 13-3 last 2 years and brought everybody back. You didn't have the Buccaneers winning the division. Nobody did, except crazy people. But this season has been so predictable for Tampa. The only thing I worried about, I think, is the problem. Not because I'm smart, because it's obvious. I lived in Tampa. I lived near Boston. I followed Brady. I followed Arians. Their personalities are different. You're seeing a clash here. I don't think it lasts 2-3 years. I think at the end of this year, they'll make decisions. I think Tampa goes to the playoffs, wins a playoff game, maybe two. But none of this is surprising. We all grabbed our little pocket schedules and did the WL game. We all did it. And right now it's LWWWL, WWWL, WLL, and we'll finish WWWW. That's what it's going to finish. Sundays are crazy. It's all very predictable. Here's Tom Brady after.
No, it's just the external noise that when you're losing, you know, that's what you deal with. So, I love playing for the guys that I play with, the coaches, the whole organization's been unbelievable. And I think you got to go out and I certainly have to do a better job the last 4 weeks of the year. So appreciate it. Just have a good week.
All right, Monday Night Football tonight, Seattle and Philadelphia, and here's why it's big. Because what we have in the NFL right now, it's pretty clear, and I don't think any of us would argue. We have three really good teams. The Chiefs, the Steelers, and the Saints are really good. They're not perfect. Sometimes the Chiefs don't play with a ton of urgency. Steelers don't run the ball consistently. And the Saints, frankly, don't throw the ball over the top. But in a salary cap era, they're about as good as you're going to get. They're really good teams. And the Chiefs and the Steelers and the Saints also have something else in common. They have excellent general managers. Draft well, develop well, and all three coaches, Tomlin, Sean Payton, and Andy Reid, have Super Bowls. And we know Breeze, Big Ben, and Mahomes are good enough to win a Super Bowl. Those are the three best teams in the league. Now, the fourth best team changes every week. Yesterday, it was Tennessee. 2 weeks ago, it was the Rams. 3 weeks ago, the Colts rolled Tennessee. It was the Colts. Some weekends, last night, could it be Green Bay? Tampa Bay against the Packers looked like the fourth best team. And the Raiders on one Sunday at Arrowhead Stadium, they looked like the fourth best team. So we know the three best. Put them in any order. I would go Kansas City, Pittsburgh, New Orleans. But the most interesting fourth place team, the team that has the highest ceiling, plays tonight, Seattle. And this is very interesting. So Seattle has all the ingredients of a Super Bowl winning team. Head coach going to the Hall of Fame. Quarterback's a superstar. Playmakers all over the place. They can be physical or finesse. Chris Carson back tonight. Watch them get physical. They play from behind well. We know that with Russell. And they play with the lead well. They're good on the road. Excellent on the road. 10-1, their last 11 East Coast road games. And oh, by the way, they're in every game. They never get blown out. They lost to Buffalo by 10 this year, and that was a shocker. They're in every game. All the Super Bowl ingredients, except one thing. You got no pass rush. You got no defense. Here's what's very interesting. So Jamal Adams was hurt. He came back. He's back now. And Carlos Dunlap, Seahawks gave up a late draft pick to get Carlos Dunlap. Since they've played together, Seattle has 13 sacks. Tied for the NFL lead, I believe. And they have a young player named LJ Collier. They drafted him a year ago from TCU, did nothing, a little hurt his first year. Played great against Arizona. So if you watch that game tonight and you see a consistent pass rush from Seattle, then they're the fourth best team in the league. So tonight, because what I look for in Super Bowl teams is ingredients. The Steelers have it, the Chiefs have it, and the Saints have it. And everybody else, every week, Tennessee looks like it. Then it's the Rams, then it's the Bucs, then it's the Packers. Watch Seattle tonight. If they get a pass rush, they're my four. And they've got the players and the components, Dunlap, Jamal Adams, and LJ Collier. So I think that's kind of where we stand on a Monday morning as we head out of Thanksgiving. Fourth team, looking for the ingredients. Seattle has all of them except the consistent pass rush. Will they do it in back-to-back weeks? Because they did it last week against Arizona. If they do it again tonight, you got yourself a potential Super Bowl team in the Pacific Northwest.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
So I've always had this sort of belief that if money's too easy, you get in trouble in life. You should have to work for it. Hollywood money is all cheekbones and clear skin. It's too easy. That's why there's so many messed up Hollywood families. There's a lot of fortunes in retail. Retail's hard. In waste management, in insurance, annuities. There's a lot of fortunes been made in those. That's hard money. That's hard money. Dealing with the public, waste management, you know what you're dealing with. Hollywood money's too easy. It's glamorous, too easy, too quick. If you hit it big, it's just too easy. Making $500,000 to put something on Instagram? Got to be kidding me. That's why I got so many messed up families. And I watch Kansas City, and they're starting to remind me of the Kevin Durant, Steph, Clay Warriors the first year. It's too easy. And psychologically, when it's that easy, it's hard to play with a ton of urgency. Think about this. If I told you Patrick Mahomes had 462 yards, three touchdowns, no picks, Tyreek Hill had 270 yards, Patrick Mahomes had 124 passer rating, you'd be like, oh my God, who they beat 46-13? No, actually, they won 27-24, and if not for completing a third down pass, 43-year-old Tom Brady at home got the ball left with a minute. They were great on third down. They had 20%, 25% more first downs. They dominated time of possessions. Mahomes was perfect. Tyreek Hill was unguardable. And they won 27-24 and needed a third down completion to seal it. In New England, that was waste management. That was annuities. It was never easy. I mean, the Randy Moss years for a couple years in the regular season looked easy, but it wasn't easy in the postseason. I mean, Tom Brady went to 9 Super Bowls in New England. 8 of them were one possession games. And the 9th one, the Rams, he was awful. Tom Brady never scored a touchdown in the first quarter of any Super Bowl he's been in. Think about that. It's always been hard. New England won with efficiency and detail. It was never easy money. And I think that's why it was always every New England game. You rarely saw them. I mean, Joy and I watched the last 15 years of that. They were never inconsistent. You got the same team every week. Kansas City, you don't get the same team every half. It's not a knock on it, but they scored 10 points in the final three quarters. When you're so brilliant, when you're so beautiful, when it's so easy, when you're so talented, and it's effortless, it gets to your head. It's hard. You know, the Chicago Bulls were really consistent. I mean, they'd have the occasional bad game against an expansion team, but, you know, as great as the Chicago Bulls were, they weren't pretty. They were tough. Scottie Pippen never shot a great jumper. Michael scored a lot of his points at the rim getting tackled. Dennis Rodman, old guys with knee braces like Steve Kerr. I mean, they had these Will Perdues. And if you go look, Ron Harper's, if you go look at the DNA of the Chicago Bulls, the greatness of their dynasty was it was never easy. Kobe, Shaq, that was easy. There were some easy times. Magic, Kareem, sometimes it was easy. But it wasn't easy. It wasn't easy with New England's dynasty. It wasn't. To the very end, they were trailing Seattle. They were trailing Atlanta. They struggled against the Rams. They all looked like the Eagles Super Bowl or the Giants Super Bowl. They all looked like that. And so as I watch them, I think to myself, well, Andy Reid's going to have to put his foot down with this team a lot. They're young. They're talented. It's easy money. The wins come easy. The points come fast. And you go back to that Kevin Durant, Steph, Clay Warriors. The first year flew through it, like Kansas City last year. Kansas City, week 12, defense is healthy, flies through the league. Second year, the Warriors, KD, Steph, forced to 7 in the Western Conference Final. The year after that, they went to 6 games in the first round and 6 games in the second round against clearly inferior teams. Some of this stuff, when you win early and it's easy and it's effortless and you're brilliant, it's not the hitting, it's the head. You got to battle yourself. I don't remember seeing a team. I mean, Kansas City, I don't even, that's why I compare them to the Warriors. I don't remember any NFL team that scores this fast, this quick, this easy. It looks like a 7-on-7 drill. And Tampa's got a defense. It looks like high school 7-on-7 stuff. It's just kind of strolling back there, and Mahomes just keeps backpedaling and backpedaling and backpedaling. He plays like nobody else does. He just keep back. 7-step drop, he's like 13 steps back. Then kind of sign, arms it up the field. Oh, nobody can guard Tyreek Hill. Another touchdown, 270 yards. Fastest guy in the league. Best tight end in the league. Best quarterback arm in the league. Running backs can play. Offensive line can block. Coach is brilliant.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
So one of the uglier games yesterday, I didn't spend a ton of time watching it. The Saints crushed Denver. Denver had to use basically a scout team wide receiver, Kendall Hinton, to be a quarterback because a COVID outbreak on their team. And, you know, a lot of people are saying it's unfair. The NFL should have pushed it back. And my takeaway is no. No, Jeff Driscoll, a quarterback for the Broncos, had tested positive. And then later in the week, players around him for Denver, quarterbacks for Denver, did not wear a mask around him. That's on Denver. That's not on the NFL to babysit. The NFL is not being subtle here. It's a cutthroat league. It always has been. They'll cut you. Tom Brady could be cut tomorrow. You got to know the company you go work for. You got to know their business sensibility. This is not the NBA. It's not what it is. It's not baseball, 10-year contracts. It's not international soccer. Stars sometimes don't pay taxes. They're dramatic. They date supermodels. NFL's hard. They're cutthroat. Bottom line, the Shield wins. Shield's more important than almost all the players. And the reality is they've been fining people and taking away draft picks. They've never been subtle about this. Here's the rules. Follow them. We'll give you weekly reminders. And if you don't, you don't play. And so Denver, we're going to make an example of you. I got no problem with it. By the way, the Baltimore Ravens, they're to blame for this mess. I feel bad, but they had a strength and conditioning coach. I know his name. I won't say it. Who was a non-master. Spread it throughout the team. Who pays the price? The Steelers, who didn't get a game check. Follow the rules. The well-run organizations in this league. Kansas City, Pittsburgh, Rams, Seattle, Green Bay. They're not having outbreaks. Be well-run. Be responsible. This is not on the NFL. You know, at some point, the NFL is the parent and the players are the kids. And the NFL is like, okay, here's the ground rules. Here's the curfew. And by the way, I feel bad. I mean, do we treat COVID like an injury? I mean, I know people that have gotten it and they're responsible people. I'm not pointing this and that. But the Baltimore situation and the Denver situation, those are on the teams and the players. And again, you people are picking it. At the grocery store I go to, I don't go as much as I used to, everybody wears masks. And I'm looking at studies where they say even wearing masks, the grocery store is like ground zero. People get it. So I'm not saying just irresponsible people get COVID. We're flying on planes. You hope you don't get it. But these two situations, teams have to own up to it. The NFL's not been subtle. They have not been the permissive parent. Fines, draft picks. You know, the Saints got caught in their locker room after the game, having a party, videotaping it, not wearing masks. Got fined. It's on you. The league told you they didn't want it. Got to follow directions.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
All right, here we go. Monday, Colin right, Colin wrong. Fire away.
Where Colin was right.
I said when Drew Brees got hurt and Sean Payton put in Taysom Hill, I said, okay, media, stop. Sean Payton knows the offense better than we do. He's now 7-0 without Drew Brees in 2 years. Plus 76-point differential. Sometimes resumes matter, and don't get me wrong, I think coaches, even successful ones, I criticize Belichick's drafting prowess, but in the end, the media was so, you know, they wanted this Jameis Winston thing, and so did I, but he knows what he's doing. And by the way, they're paying Taysom Hill like a lot of money to be a third-string quarterback. They want to see if he can play, and what do you know? They're 2-0 and two blowout wins.
Where Colin was wrong.
I'm going to rescind my John Gruden coach of the year for a couple of weeks. First of all, what was that? They were not prepared to play. 11 penalties, 3 of 12 on third down, 5 turnovers, 6 points. It was one of the, and there, by the way, you can't convince me Atlanta's got significantly better players than the Raiders. They were not ready to play when the plane landed. Really bad Raider performance.
Where Colin was right.
When everybody fell in love with Sean McVay 2 years ago, I said he's not even the best coach in his own division. It's Kyle Shanahan, and I like Sean McVay. Shanahan swept Sean McVay and the Rams again this year. 2 years, 4-0 against McVay. Plus, three of the four games, Shanahan has been the underdog. So he beat him with Nick Mullins. He's beat him with Jimmy Garoppolo. And when Garoppolo wasn't 100%, and I like Sean McVay, and I think he's one of the top 10 coaches in the NFL. But if you go resume to resume, game to game, Shanahan owns McVay right now. And he beat him last night with Nick Mullins as a big dog.
Where Colin was wrong.
Matt Nagy's a good guy, and I really like him. But I had somebody close to Chicago say, watch out, he's not very experienced, and right now I can't support him. Listen, here's the reality. They don't have an identity on either side of the football. Their defense has better players than the performance and productivity. The offense can't get its act together. I'll just say this. It's not impossible. I'm watching Joe Judge with the Giants and Brian Flores with the Miami Dolphins. You can tell very quickly if a team has a direction, a point of view, and an identity or a personality. And as much as I may like Matt Nagy, his lack of experience in Kansas City, he didn't call the plays very long. He's being exposed.
Where Colin was right.
And I said a month ago when the Giants were 2-7, I said, no, these are the Dolphins of last year. They're not bad. They have now won three straight. They lead the NFC East. Now, yesterday, Daniel Jones got hurt, so it was a really bad second half with Colt McCoy. This team, they won that OBJ trade that everybody banged on the Giants. They got Dexter Lawrence, Jabril Peppers in the box. They ended up getting a starting guard to upgrade their offensive line. And again, they have had the lead in the fourth quarter in six straight games. Now, I don't know how they're going to play without Daniel Jones, but the New York Giants are the best team in that division. And I actually think if Daniel Jones comes back healthy, they are capable. They won't be favored, but they're capable of winning a playoff game.
Where Colin was wrong.
I'm going to take a wrong on everything the last year with the New York Jets. Adam Gase is awful. Sam Darnold had his receivers. He was bad. Nothing works. Nothing. Yesterday, by the way, their go-to guy on offense is 37-year-old Frank Gore. They couldn't move the ball. They're 0-11. And listen to Adam Gase and his complete nonsense after the game. He was caught red-handed in the play-calling duties.
Adam, why did you take over the play-calling?
I didn't take over. We did this. We've done the same thing the last four games.
We were watching Dowell for the whole game. He wasn't doing anything. I mean, he was just standing there.
He tells me it's not hard. This is not hard. We go through it, the drive before. Hey, these are the three plays. I do the third downs.
So what happens after the three plays when you have a series? Because we were watching one where Dowell was talking to Frank Pollock. He wasn't calling the plays. You were.
What part of the game was it?
Oh, boy.
I want to say that was the third.
Yeah, when we got down, then I was trying to do some of the two-minute stuff.
I've never been more wrong. He has no business being a head coach.
Where Colin was right.
Either did Matt Patricia, and I didn't buy into him week one. He dressed like a frat boy. He was arrogant. He was unlikable. He never got buy-in from the players. 13-29-1. And that's with Matt Stafford, who is certainly a competent quarterback. How great he is, I don't know. But, you know, it's the reality is these are $3, 4, and $5 billion franchises. And this is Adam Gase and Matt Patricia. Do you understand you're the face of the franchise? Look it, act it, talk it. This isn't high school football. Take that stupid pencil out of your ear. Get it together. You know, and again, it's this New England arrogance where proximity to Belichick, well, here's the way we do it. Well, you don't have any buy-in from the players. By the way, Belichick admits he didn't get buy-in from many of the players in Cleveland because he didn't have Super Bowls. Andy Reid now will get more buy-in because he's got Super Bowls. Tomlin gets buy-in. Sean Payton. If you've never been a head coach, you got to earn it. It's not granted.
Where Colin was wrong.
I never understood Mitch Trubisky. I didn't like him in college. I didn't like the Bears drafted him. I don't understand it. Now, this is Tom Herman. I don't get the Trubisky thing. I don't. I don't like the way he throws the ball. He had a 74 quarterback rating last night. He's the nicest guy in the world. But when the Bears drafted him, I didn't get it. I thought Deshaun Watson was the better pick. He was only a one-year starter in college. But for whatever reason, Chicago, even when he was winning games and got to the playoffs, I didn't like Mitch Trubisky. And last night, once again, he had three straight plays in succession yesterday that were just brutal, including an underthrown pick. Stop telling me he's got a good enough arm. He's a Northern Division quarterback with bad mechanics, therefore it affects the way he throws the football.
Where Colin was wrong.
Tom Herman, it's not working at the University of Texas. I liked Tom Herman when he got hired by the Longhorns. Why wouldn't I? I talked to him. He was smart. He was aggressive. He had a presence. Urban Meyer signed up for him. He was a good recruiter earlier in his career. But he's 7-7 in his last 14 games. There's no excuse to lose to Iowa State in football. Stop it. Texas has 300 Division I football players in their state. Iowa's got nine a year. Now, Iowa State's well coached, but there's just no excuse. Again, Texas recruiting is bad right now. They're getting beat in state. The word is he's a little too intense and a little arrogant and does not curry favor with a lot of the long-standing popular high school football coaches. I'm not inside the program, but I thought it would work, and it doesn't work.
Where Colin was right.
College football has a competition problem. People ask me all the time, you used to talk way more college football. And I say, yeah, it used to be more interesting. Alabama crushed Auburn this weekend. Clemson crushed Pittsburgh, and that's okay. But when Alabama's winning average games by 30 points, we have a problem. The sport has no CEO. It's time they got one. Scholarships, 70 per team, not 85. And if you make the playoff in back-to-back years, cut it down to 60 to 65 scholarships. Right now, this sport is so lopsided that it's hurting the ratings. It would hurt attendance. Alabama struggled to sell tickets in recent years to their student body. College football, do not become college basketball. Translation, irrelevant. Hire a CEO. Stop the balkanization of college football where every conference is doing it on their own. Let's get this thing corralled. Fewer scholarships per team. Spread the talent out.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Trent Dilfer, how about this story? So I've known Trent for a long time. In fact, story time by Uncle Colin. So years ago, I worked at another company. I don't know what happened to them. And I brought Trent Dilfer on as a guest. And I went up, I forget the guy's name. I think it's Bob Eaton or something. So I walked up. He was a big manager type, and he'd been there forever. And I said, hey, you guys need to get Dilfer and put him on the air. And he goes, the quarterback, Trent Dilfer? I said, just trust me. He's going to be a great broadcaster. And so after one spot, and they eventually did, and Trent went there. And then Trent and I would talk all the time. And then about a couple of years ago, Trent's like, you know, I want to do more than I played football and I broadcast football, but I want to change people's lives. And that's how Trent thinks. And so he gets into this coaching thing. And for years and years, I told him he should get in coaching. He's like, oh, these guys have no life. I want to watch my girls play volleyball. It's a terrible life. But he went and said, I'm going to do high school. So he goes to Nashville, Tennessee. I don't know how he found this place. It's called Lipscomb Academy Head Football Coach. Year two, they're in the state championship. He's got all sorts of NFL guys on the staff and a big facility. And so it's fun when you watch somebody and they've got these goals. And now enough of sucking up. Let's go talk to Trent Dilfer, 15 years in the NFL, blah, blah, blah. He still needs to shave to help that. Look at that beard. What is going on? So, they, by the way, they just practiced. He got off the field. They practiced in snow. Who knew it snowed in Tennessee? But apparently it did. So I want to start with this, relationships. And listen, it's hard. When people are successful, they don't want to change. And Brady's the most successful player ever. And Bruce Arians has had success. And I never worried about the age and the arm stuff. I don't worry about that. But I did always say, boy, these are different guys. Their lifestyles, their language. And I look at it and I think, I could see in a year, Josh McDaniels coming down and Bruce saying, hey, it's been a hell of a career. I don't know. There's something, Trent, here with Bruce and Tom. I don't want to overreact on a Monday, but they are different cats, right? You see that, right?
I totally agree with you. And It was interesting when this thing went down the offseason and Tom went to Tampa, all the questions were, how are they going to coexist? And I just used the word interesting. I had my doubts, but I just thought it would be very interesting. You have a coach that's really lived by the machete, right? His entire career is no risk it, no biscuit. Like, he wants to take the machete and chop the opponent's head off on every play. And then you have the greatest of all time, Tom Brady, that's done it with a surgical tool. You know, he's done it through just dissecting the opponent, playing and play out, death by a thousand cuts. And I'm like, I don't know how these things are going to blend. And now we're seeing it play out. You're seeing a quarterback that DNA is to take a defense and just surgically tear it apart. And now you have a coach that keeps calling these home run shots. And you can see the disconnect. I mean, you can see him get a big play, a chunk play, and then Tom's like, okay, great. Now we have field position. Let's go dissect the defense. And then in comes another big play call. And people wonder, why is Tom so bad on these down the field passes? I don't know if it's he's bad or they just keep calling too many of them. It's not, in the NFL, you just can't call shot after shot after shot. Defenses kind of realize that and start playing back. And you can see the quarterback saying, wait a second, where's the 6-yard option route? Where's the 9-yard tight end crossing route? There's just not enough of that to fit his game. And I really put the blame on Arians and Byron Leftwich for not calling the game around their quarterback. They're calling a system game. They're not calling the game around their QB, who happens to be the greatest that's ever lived.
So it's interesting. When you were on the Ravens championship team, I've always felt teams that are champions built on defense, the Detroit Pistons, the Jordan team is more than people think. The Ravens team you were on, even some of the Bradshaw, you know, the Steeler teams. There's a sensibility that defense and toughness travels on the road. It's week to week. You got the same Ravens defense every week. But offensively geared dynasties, which is the Warriors, you know, the late Kobe and Shaq, Kansas City looks like they could be. It's tougher because when points come easy and they're brilliant and they're fun, it is hard to create urgency when you score 17 points in like 4 plays. And when I watch Kansas City, I think managing the egos could be part of this, right? Like, it doesn't feel like your Raven team, the psychology of this team.
It really doesn't. And I'm frankly unfamiliar with how you operate in this mode. I never played for a great offensive team, but you do study the history of the league and you study these great offenses. And at some point, they're going to get pushed back on. It's not going to be so easy. And then you start looking at critical moments. How do they perform in critical situations? So third down, we know they're fantastic. I mean, Patrick Mahomes can keep any play alive. He's magical on third down. End of game, end of half, magical. But then you get into the tight red area, and I think that's how teams are going to defend them. They know they can't stop them between the 20s. But you get in that tight red area, and that space decreases, and you can't use your speed enough. And what do? They do a lot of trick plays in the red area.
Yeah.
If you go back and look at Kansas City Chiefs, they use a lot of trickeration, a lot of misdirection, a lot of unique stuff. And it's amazing when it works. In fact, we're stealing stuff here at the high school game from them. However, you're going to come up against a team that's going to play man coverage, take away all those trick plays, not let the misdirection get them, and their ability to score touchdowns in the red area will determine whether they can win another world championship. Now, I don't want to say they can't because they've been phenomenal, but if you're looking for an area when they get pressed on, when they get pushed back, it's going to be the closer they get to that goal line. As Steve Young used to say all the time when I worked with them, the more field goals you kick, the closer you are to losing. They got to score touchdowns when they get deep against these great defensive teams.
You know, you've built a high school program up, and then I watch the Saints, and I think to myself, I'm so impressed with an organization. First of all, last 5 years, they have not missed on a first, a second, or a third-round pick. They know what they're doing upstairs. But here they bring in Taysom Hill, and last year it's Teddy Bridgewater. They don't miss a beat. They don't miss a beat. I think that's a lot harder than people think. Is it Sean Payton? Is it Taysom Hill? Is it Mickey Loomis, the GM? Like, who gets credit for it?
I think you got to start with that marriage of Mickey Loomis and Sean Payton. They're brilliant. They're like John Schneider and Pete Carroll in Seattle. I mean, they just get it. They think the same thoughts. They have that simpatico relationship that makes them so great. And then I really think Sean Payton is a kingmaker when it comes to quarterbacks. I don't want to take anything away from Drew Brees. He's amazing. He's fantastic. He probably would have been fantastic without Sean Payton. But I think he would even tell you he's the Hall of Fame player he is because of Sean Payton.
Yeah.
5-0 with Teddy Bridgewater last year, 2-0 with Taysom Hill this year. I mean, his ability to find ways to win offensively is incredible. And to call a game around the person taking the snaps goes back to the Brady Arians thing. Sean Payton does have a system. He is player-centric. He is quarterback-centric. He is going to call the game in such a way that your quarterback is going to gain confidence throughout the game, put him in a position to succeed. That's why his quarterbacks are so successful. It's why every single year when there's this free agent quarterback that needs to be rehabilitated, I always say, find a way to the Saints. Do anything you can to go be a Sean Payton and let him rehab you. You will leave your time in New Orleans a much better player than when you got there, much like Mike Holmgren was for so many of us. Our careers were kind of on the skids. We weren't sure. We found a way to get to Mike Holmgren because you knew once you got under Mike's tutelage, once you got underneath that umbrella of teaching, you were going to be a better player when you left. And Sean Payton does the same thing.
So it's interesting. It's kind of fascinating. We know Belichick's a very smart guy. He gives young quarterbacks fits. It doesn't matter if they run like Kyler or they're Josh Allen. They can be big. They can be small. There's never been a coach in my life that you just bet him when he faces any quarterback with under 30 starts. So I watched Kyler yesterday. So tell me, you're the quarterback. You go to the line. And Belichick's the defensive coordinator. What is he doing back there? What's the secret sauce that has all the young quarterbacks? One week they're great. The next week they're learning how to play football. What does he do? What did he do to Kyler?
The biggest thing that I've noticed over the years was it wasn't what he did before the ball was snapped. He actually made it look kind of the same every time he went to the line of scrimmage. It's what happened right after the ball was snapped. There's always going to be a subtle movement, a change on the edges, a change in the secondary, a change on the perimeter that's going to take what you thought was going to be the defense and turn it into something else. And then the biggest thing he does is every young quarterback's the same way. They're going to find three or four things they've settled in on that they really like to do. Okay, that's how they eat their soup. They eat it right-handed with their spoon. And then he's going to take those things away from you and put that spoon in your left hand and make you try to eat soup with your left hand, which is going to be really hard and you're going to spill it all over your face. That's what he does to young quarterbacks is he says, okay, this is Kyler Murray's DNA. He really likes you A, B, C, and D. So we're going to take all those things away after the ball is snapped and see how he does with the rest of the alphabet. My guess, he's not going to be ready to deal with the rest of the alphabet. So that's really been his way of doing it. How he doesn't, I'm not smart enough to figure that out. But I can tell you that every young quarterback I talk to, every time I've studied him, when I played against him, he has found a way that whatever you like to do the most, you didn't get to do that for 60 minutes.
By the way, you've been with the Seahawks and you've watched Pete Carroll's teachings. I said tonight's a very interesting game for me because it's very difficult in the NFL to start a season with a liability and then solve it. Even if you're a great coach, it's hard because there's injuries and there's cap issues. So Seattle had no pass rush. And then John Schneider smartly goes, let's go get Carlos Dunlap. He's unhappy. He's always been a nice rusher. And then they get Jamal Adams. You know, before that, he's more of a linebacker almost than a safety. And then they have a kid named LJ Collier, who they drafted out of TCU, physical player. He started playing well. So having been there, I said to myself, all the ingredients to win a Super Bowl are there. They don't have a pass rush. And then I watched them against Arizona. I went, okay, timeout. I see a pass rush. So just give me a little bit of Pete Carroll. You've been in the meetings. You've been coaching, and you're a coach now yourself. Can you turn a complete weakness to a strength, or am I being too optimistic with Seattle up front?
No, you're not being too optimistic. It's really the thing that most coaches miss. I think everybody in the talent and coaching business understands the acquisition of talent is important. Where most miss it is the development of that talent. And that's why Pete Carroll could go take over a high school program tomorrow and do what he did at USC and what he's done with the Seahawks, because him and his staff don't just believe in the acquisition of talent, which they've done, but it's the day in, day out development of talent. And when you do that and you bring it together, you get better at something that you weren't very good at to start with. And that's what you're seeing him do in Seattle right now, is they didn't panic when they weren't getting a pass rush. Now they went out and acquired more talent, but then you have to develop that talent. You have to have it mesh with the rest of your players on defense too. They've tweaked their system a little bit. They're not going to say, we're just going to do this system because this is what we do. They're going to tweak their system around that talent that they've brought in and that they've developed. So they do as good a job as anybody of the development of their team throughout the season. And too often these NFL GMs and coaches say, this is who we are. And this, you know, what you have is what you get the most out of it. They say, no, this is who we are, you know, in preseason. Here's who we are the first quarter of the season. Here we are the second half of the season. Here's who we are after Thanksgiving. And that's really where Pete and Schneider have made their hay, is after Thanksgiving, because they've invested so much in the development of their team that they're going to play their best football after Thanksgiving. And that's really what you're trying to do when you want to become a championship team.
Lipscomb State Championship game is Thursday. Who do you guys play, by the way?
We play CPA, our rival, who we beat for the first time in 10 years in Week 10. But I don't think either team played their best football, so there should be a dogfight for the state championship.
All right, I can't believe your wife hasn't made you shave that thing yet. Good luck to you going forward.